This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
With a recent member survey run here at Legal & General finding that over half of respondents would engage more with their pension if they knew it was having a positive social impact, and a quarter pay more in, the race to define and manage environmental, social and governance considerations, or ESG concerns, is very much on. And in that respect, the pensions regulator and the Financial Conduct Authority are no exception to other bodies. Adding to a landscape already awash with new legislation, these organisations are chomping at the bit to respond to consumers' ESG concerns in what can be a murky and poorly defined area. A few months ago in this studio, we discussed the effects that new Department of Work and Pensions legislation would have on trustees' fiduciary duty. Now, the FCA wants to expand the duties of independent governance committees, or IGCs, to report on their firm's policies on ESG issues, including consumer concerns, stewardship, and climate change. Joining me in the studio today to explore what these changes may mean for pension schemes are Daniel Godfrey, Legal & General IGC member, and Simon Chinnery, Head of DC Client Solutions. Daniel has held a range of senior positions in the pensions industry, including chairman of the Personal Finance Education Group, director general of the Association of Investment Companies, and chief executive of the Investment Association. Daniel, Simon, thank you for joining us. Could you kindly give me a brief overview of your role as part of the Legal & General IGC in safeguarding members' pensions?
Yeah, the role of the Independent Governance Committee is to provide a voice for the members within Legal & General. So we're a group of six people. We are independent of Legal & General, and we have very specific responsibilities to monitor, to assess, and to report on value to members every year. And in doing that, we look at things like the performance of the funds, we look at the suitability of the default funds, we look at the levels of customer service, we look at the sort of options that are being given to members to make sure that they're staying up with the times and latest developments, to make sure that the money's kept safely and to make sure that it's managed responsibly. And now we're getting additional responsibilities to look at the way in which Legal & General treats these environmental, social and governance issues.
And indeed, the scope of the IGC seems to have expanded quite significantly in recent years. In April, alongside the clarifications about ESG issues, the FCA suggested expanding the remit to include independent oversight of the value for money for their firm's pathway solutions. What are your views on this, and how do you think the IGCs are finding their feet with this new legislation?
Well, my own view is that this is kind of inevitable. It's right that members of schemes should have some independent governance protection if they go into default pathways in retirement. And I think it's likely to expand further. For instance, why should it be that you get this governance if you're a member of a workplace scheme, but not if you're an individual who's self-employed? So I think we're likely to see more expansion of governance, and the regulator will have to decide whether they want to set up new bodies or just use the one that's already there. And my guess is that this is going to lead to an increase in work and coverage for independent governance committees.
So an expanded role for independent governance committees overall. And the new FCA consultation has also proposed that environmental, social and governance integration, or ESG, is now viewed as financially material. Can you explain what these clarifications mean in practice?
Well, to us at the Legal & General IGC, not a great deal, because we've already been very clear that we think that these issues are financially material and important for us to look at. But I think there's no doubt that making it a regulatory obligation does focus the minds and therefore makes it more likely that both IGCs and the fund managers themselves will recognise that they really need to step up their game to consider the risks of climate change, the risks of inequality, the risks of degradation to species, human health and so on, and that that has a material impact on the future wealth of our members who may be saving for another 40 years and then living for another 40 years after that. So we really have to take a long-term view, and these issues are terribly important.
Absolutely. Flipping over to Simon now, we hear so much about ESG integration. What are the key areas that your clients have identified as really material for them?
I think a lot of them are looking at the at that through risk, the perspective of risk to the portfolio. And as Daniel has said, I think they're very mindful of the fact that certainly, you know, if we're talking about trustees, in that case, they'd be looking at members being invested for long periods of time, and therefore sustainability is really important. And what does that actually mean? Well, it means companies that are going to be around for the future, and employing best practices. And I think that from the regulatory point of view, it's really just the focus of risk means, you know, what do we need to do as asset managers to really kind of ensure as much as we can without a crystal ball what good looks like and how do we implement that across our portfolios. And just to say, I do think, you know, even though there is a lot of conversation around ESG, there's still a lot of confusion out there. And part of that confusion, I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in where there it starts with a discussion about, oh, well, this is ethical investment. And to some extent, you know, I understand that because, you know, often business ethics are kind of muddled in there along with, well, we've got an ethical fund, surely that will meet ESG.
So and there's a kind of definition element to this.
There is a definition element. And I think there's a lot of work being done, you know, certainly by us, but other managers as well, around trying to clarify that. But ultimately, it's really from our point of view, it's this focus on good governance, and as a manager looking after a lot of money on behalf of many different schemes and many different members, this is really about active ownership, and ultimately that's about voting as far as we're concerned.
And that kind of leads me on quite nicely to my next question, which was going to be about what asset managers can do and are doing on the members' behalf.
Yeah, I think that improving governance standards is critical, and an engagement with companies is critical, and you know that isn't about as far as I can see. This is not about us saying this is how you should run your company. I don't think that would be much of a dialogue. I think the door would be shown to us pretty quickly. I think it's about sharing best practices, and I think our job is to definitely try and share those best practices and measure and be really clear using data that's publicly available as to what we're talking about, what metric we're looking at, and how we can open up a conversation, a dialogue with companies. I think the emphasis on working with clients, I think, can't be made too strongly, because mm-hmm. I think clients absolutely look to us to be out there engaging with companies, voting against bad practices, hopefully improving overall governance and quality of what's being done and the management. But ultimately, just always remembering this is for the members. And, you know, it really is across a very wide spectrum. Diversity it often comes up in conversations. Executive pay does, but then that's been around forever, and you know that's definitely one. But I think it's really for what I see, it's about this awareness that there are some significant risks, and climate risk is obviously one that's very much in the foreground, and that one I think it employs everybody's minds.
Daniel, Simon set out a number of themes: sustainability, client collaboration, executive pay, diversity. Why do you think the FCA has specifically called out climate change as a significant factor in this consultation?
I think it's because it's the one that's most easily provable to be the one that has an existential threat to human life, and therefore it quite naturally goes to the top of the agenda. Clearly, all the other issues are very important. We know that companies perform better if they have diversity of thinking, if they have more women involved at the top level. We know that companies will perform better over the longer term if they invest in their people, invest in innovation, invest in productivity, invest in the communities that they inhabit. Climate change, though, has a particular profile, I think, because of the risks not only to human life, but also to the way of human life over the, you know, really the foreseeably short future as well. That doesn't mean that the other issues should be forgotten. I think the purpose of the active engagement that Simon was talking about has really, from Legal and General's perspective, it has to be to support, to encourage, to exhort, to pressurise, and if necessary, to try to require companies to behave in a way that's sustainable and that's consistent with wealth creation over the long term, that doesn't damage other people or the planet.
But being part of that conversation doesn't necessarily mean divesting straight away, does it?
No, it doesn't. And of course, it's perfectly legitimate for individual members to say, I particularly dislike tobacco. I don't want to invest in funds that hold tobacco stocks. And they can find funds that do that. Or to say, I don't like gambling or armaments industry. And I think that's perfectly acceptable, and people should have the right to choose those sorts of funds. However, the overall approach, I think, is to say that the responsible way is to look at sustainability, and that will take you into investing in and engaging with companies to make them behave in a responsible way, whatever it is they're doing. And it's not always the best way to do that to just say we won't invest in them. So if you imagine all investors who care about climate change stop investing in oil companies, that only leaves behind investors who don't care about climate change. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, those companies will never change their ways. So we would say it's better to be an investor in Shell or be an investor in BP, to work with other investors who care about climate change and to put pressure on the board to come up with a strategy to ensure that that company stays within the 1.5% degrees of climate change. And that's actually been successful this year in the case of both BP and Shell.
Yeah. So it's about remaining part of the conversation and applying pressure through continued dialogue rather than closing all the doors.
Yeah, but not forever. So I think it's important to put time limits on this. If you see that it's no point saying we're going to talk to people and they just say, well, talk to the hands, and you keep coming back to talk to the hands. I think you have to be willing to divest from these companies if it's clear that you can't make a difference. But your preferred approach would be to persuade them to change.
And I think that's come across in the fact that we voted against over 3,300 companies in 2018, that LGIM is prepared to take that step. Yeah. And is prepared to move forward. Simon, would you have anything further to add on that?
Yeah, I do think that while we're talking about that active engagement with consequences, there is out there amongst members quite a lot of kind of knee-jerk, maybe that's the wrong word, but knee-jerk response to us and our responsibilities as asset managers. And definitely part of that is, why on earth do you hold, you know, polluting oil companies, for instance? And so it comes back to something we were talking about before we went on air around engagement not just being one way, but listening to people through social media individually, but also telling them what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I think it's a really important point, because it isn't, in my judgment, instinctively obvious that people will understand that we believe it's better to remain engaged and to be part of that dialogue to influence change, rather than just say, you know, they're in the naughty corner, get rid of them.
I think what's great about today is we have so many listening devices, if you like, to hear what members' views actually are through things like Twitter, Facebook, social media. There is actually ample opportunity to understand how members are feeling about these issues. So we've talked a little bit about the investment side of ESG integration. Now let's talk a little bit about scheme governance and stewardship. The proposed expanded duty is that the IGC will encourage good stewardship. How, in your view, Daniel, should asset managers interpret this stipulation?
Well, I think asset managers will recognise that they're going to need to be able to articulate to their IGCs how they go about set about incorporating consideration of environmental, social and governance risks into their stock selection, or if they're passive funds, into the way they engage and vote on companies to protect their members from those risks, and that IGCs will hold them accountable both for their approach, but also to the way they execute and report on that approach. So IGC's role is not a decision-making role. It's a challenge and reporting role. So if there's something we see that we don't like, we can put that to the manager. We get a response from them. If we don't like the response, we might put that in our annual report, which is a public report. If there's something we feel particularly concerned about, then it's our obligation to take that to the regulator to say there's been this issue. We don't believe that the company has dealt with it appropriately. We'd like you to intervene. And so that's the sort of soft power that an IGC has. But really, it's very much, in most situations, it's to work by providing an unblinkered view and an external view to the manager to help them make better decisions. So it's a collaborative effort, but it's one that's based on trust, based on challenge, and based on listening to each other. And we hope that we will play a role which actually helps Legal & General to do a better job than they would do just sitting in their own echo chamber.
It's interesting that you mention echo chambers, because one of the big challenges that's been thrown back at IGCs, but also asset managers, is where is the evidence that members really want this ESG integration? I mean, first Daniel and then Simon, what would you say to those challengers?
Well, I'd say every bloody where. The reality is that if you talk to members, which we do, you mentioned the survey that was done early on, but if you talk to members, they're not in the slightest bit interested. If you want to talk to them about things like volatility, Sharpe ratios, alpha, and all the rest of the industry jargon that we love so much, if you start talking to them about living wage, about climate change, about human and antibacterial resistance and so on, antibiotics and those sorts of issues, people get really engaged. And what you can see is that that's the sort of thing people want to talk about, whether it's in the pub at the school gates or by the water cooler, because actually, believe it or not, the industry sometimes forgets it. Everyone has a stake in the future, both for themselves and for their family. So these are issues
that people... There's something about the longevity of pensions and the natural inclination to think about the future that marries quite well with the climate change issue, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. But it's not just climate change. I think we can all see some of the emerging social risks of rising inequality. We can see the sorts of risks coming our way through automation and artificial intelligence, and how businesses deal with these. And ultimately, businesses can be controlled by the people who vote the shares at annual general meetings. And that is why investment managers possibly have one of the most key roles in how business contributes to successful societies over the next 50 to 100 years. And instinctively, that is something that people understand. And that's why they care about these issues. And once they're aware of the fact that their money is actually invested in something, and they're aware of the power that collectively their money has to be a force for good, that's something that gets them quite excited. And it's something I've seen over and over and over again.
Simon, is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, definitely. And this point actually really nicely made about the force for good, because I think, you know, while the lens that often is we look through is financially material risk and impact, and therefore we tell our stories around our interventions, our voting against, to influence change. I think that my experience is that the members often really like to hear how their money is being allocated to not just sort of work for a better society, but actually to focus on opportunities. So green revenues, you know, the within, say, infrastructure. It could be the amounts of energy that we're going to require through infrastructure of projects, and the idea that their money is somehow going towards future opportunities. So it's not just about kind of spotting the companies that are not going to make it and engaging with them and having an open and full and frank discussion, but also really, really kind of being able to highlight best practices and companies that we think are really, doing outstandingly well. And I mean, in terms of the climate pledge, that's exactly what we did. You know, that it what got covered a lot was what the companies that we excluded. But actually, there were other companies that we highlighted as having engaged with and really kind of focused up on what they were doing or all the good stuff that they were doing.
This all sounds very well and good, but a concern that I've seen expressed quite often is the cost element. And there seems to be two sub-elements to this. Firstly, the idea that members will sacrifice returns for ESG integration. And secondly, that there'll be an elevated price when it comes to implementing ESG ideas into the portfolio. What would you say to that, Daniel?
I think two different answers to the different questions. So one is, I absolutely don't think that you will sacrifice returns for considering ESG issues. The effect on your overall wealth, if there is a 4-degree increase in climate change, will be devastating. Yeah. And so trying to avoid it through what we do today is incredibly important and will lead to better returns. So I think that's just not an issue that people should consider. The second point is that, yes, it does cost more to do this properly, but the price is well worth it. And in fact, the industry has an awfully long way to go. But spread across the $100 trillion that's managed by the industry, the cost of doing ESG and active stewardship properly is trivial compared to the benefits, not only of avoiding the risks of things like climate change, but enjoying the returns of taking a longer-term approach to companies and encouraging them to invest in their own futures, to invest in their people, in new products and so on, rather than, as we are today, with a very short-term approach across financial services and industry, effectively encouraging people to... it's a bit like asking them to chop down the trees in the orchard because the value of the apples is worth less than the value of the wood that we get this year. Ignoring the fact that means no apples for the next 20 years. So it does need a fundamental shift. It will cost money, but it's well worth it, and it won't cost that much by reference to the amount of money that the industry runs.
I absolutely agree, and I think that, the evidence, as much as it is, and there is a growing body of evidence, would say that, certainly looking at the E, S and G measures and the data that is becoming more reliable every year, is that it certainly should not put any investor in any kind of worse return perspective. But it's apart from, as Daniel said, the cost of ignoring this far outweighs anything else. But it's also about this transition, which is already underway, to a very different environment. And you snooze, you lose. And I mean, in the old days, that could just imply winner takes all. But I think the key here is the sort of social impact element of this is that, we are all in this together. And that sense of looking at, as I said earlier, not just spotting the risks and the stranded assets, but actually looking at the opportunities that are in all of these thematic areas, technology, whatever it is, there are opportunities. And is that, if it's a little bit of extra cost early on, we're talking about 20, 30-year investment horizons. We've absolutely no doubt it's the right thing to do.
So this is a core investment, and it really is for all of our futures. Just to wrap up now, I wanted to ask both of you what we expect to see in the future. Daniel first, how do you see ESG considerations evolving?
Well, it's a really good question and a very difficult one. I can tell you what I'd like to see. And then there's a bit of a gap between probably the expected case. So I'd like to see ESG becoming part of a much longer term approach where people focus on sustainable wealth creation rather than trying to beat an index or beat a peer group, because I think that way we'll get the best possible outcomes. I think that what's likely to happen is there's likely to be a period where some people do it really well, like Legal & General and a few others, where a lot of people try to find the cheapest way of making it look like they're doing it, and that will dilute the potential impact. It's probably still better than nothing, but a bit like the human brain that works at 5% of capacity most of the time, that's the risk, I think, that we get a lot of marketing pizzazz and not much substance. Hopefully, the regulator will see through that, but they haven't got a great track record of that in the past. So I think it's absolutely up to the people who really care about it and really do it well to call out bad practice, which we've perhaps been a bit reluctant to do in the past. But this is too important to let it go.
Thank you very much. Simon, any final thoughts?
Just that, ESG is definitely here to stay. I think it will be integrated, certainly from a risk perspective. It'll just be, and in many cases it already is, part of the landscape that anything that moves will be examined under. But I do hope that there is more a raised awareness from a member point of view about what we as an asset manager are trying to achieve with their money. And I just end on, a meeting I was at recently where a younger member just kind of cut across the bow of some older members who were talking about this short-term, focus, and just very politely said, look, I'm going to be around and my money's going to be around a long time after you will have gone off and done whatever you're going to do.
That's a very polite way of putting it.
Exactly. This is really important to me. So with that, I think, if we keep that focus, we can't fail.
So a constantly evolving space with plenty of developments to keep abreast of. Thank you both for a really interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to all of our listeners. For more information, please see our article, which is linked in the podcast notes, and join us next week for another fabulous episode of LGIM Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.